Proverbs chapter 11, verse 28.
Method,
it says that he who trusts
in
has security in his wealth,
now,
he will fail.
All ideas,
and the righteous are like a leaf that are going to bloom.
From a certain subject.
Verse 28, that he has security in his wealth and not in God, and he will fail at the hands of those that search to destroy him.
In other words, most people.
Okay, that's, we're going according to that interpretation.
Give interpretation.
The question is that the question is how will he fail? So the Ibn Ezra, in other words, on the verse, the question is how will he fail? So the Ibn Ezra explains that he'll fail by others. In other words, other people that that search to destroy him will succeed and they'll destroy him.
Between them and the scientists.
As wide as the Ibn Ezra interpreted this way. I mean, there could be hundreds of ways of failing where you have security and money. Why does the Ibn Ezra put it in this fashion? A leaf doesn't bloom. The verse says really a leaf. And the leaf doesn't bloom. So why does it say a leaf? It should say a flower. Okay?
Proverbs of a beginner.
You have to take up is why is it, what causes a person to seek security in his money? Why does a person feel that? Why does a person need that? What causes
the same thing that any theorist.
The possibility is that's the way the world is, and that's the way people are. The only thing is that happens to be true, but what we want is what causes the people to be that way. Why are people that way?
So we read the Chumash.
The next possibility is that it is greed. Okay? Now, greed itself needs an analysis of what causes a person to be greedy. So after I would analyze greed, and I would analyze how money is security, then I would see if these two connect up. But at this point, I really don't know if they connect up, because I just see people are greedy, and people have security and money, but I'm not sure if it's the same thing yet until I get into the causes of greed and the causes of security.
Taken ethics, so then you go.
This is that people want to have everything they want in the physical world. Okay? In other words, security is one of them. I mean, there are many things people want. Anything they see and anything they want, they desire. Okay? Now, as long as you have money, then you could always have that fantasy of having anything you want. All your desires could be satisfied. You ever stop to think about if you have some money put away, so then you'll just fantasize all the things that you could get with that money. As soon as you spend the money, the fantasy is gone, because then you have the particular thing. But as long as you have money, even if it's $1,000, like, you start fantasizing all the things that you can get with that $1,000. Okay? Okay, good. But the question is where does that fantasy come from?
To ask the question, because the question is the God.
Fantasy where I can get anything I want. In other words, what's the desire for that fantasy about money? That I can do anything I want. That's really the fantasy. With money, you have the fantasy I could do anything I want.
As many questions as possible.
The question is does the person have a wrong conception of need? Yeah, in the fantasy world, what your needs are and what your desires are definitely a fantasy. That's why we say fantasy. And the physical world definitely will not satisfy that fantasy. But however, a person imagines that all his fantasies can be satisfied.
To the head of a
they say that sometimes a person has a family and he starts working for the family and then he goes after riches. Now, the practicality of supporting a family, you can figure it out. There's statistics exactly what you need for your family and what your needs are. But however, the fantasy of money is way beyond. I mean, when you're talking about people making millions upon millions of dollars, you're not talking about just to support his family. It goes beyond the support of family. And a person starts out, there's some people, when they start out making money, it's a very practical thing to support a family. And somehow, as they get involved, it goes way beyond the practical. And they're just driven to make money way beyond that practical. And that's what, that point is what we're discussing, not the practical.
I have transferred
time when a person is first born in the first few months of life, they do not recognize anything outside of themselves. Okay? It has been shown that at this point the child feels totally secure and all its desires is immediately satisfied. It's totally satisfied and feels totally secure within these without the reality. What happens is, what interferes with the security is reality. Reality breaks in. And suddenly they're aware of a world around them that they don't have control over and that doesn't completely satisfy them. Now what happens is a person tries, this fantasy is the fantasy of trying to get back to that time of life. Okay? So, the thing is at that time, every wish in the mind of the infant was immediately satisfied. Okay, and that's what a person is trying to get back to, and it fits in directly with the fantasy that we described before, that a person, when they have money, they always try to, in other words, they fantasize of all the things they could get, like they could do anything they want. The person feels totally they could do anything they want, and there's nothing to stop them, as long as they have their money.
How you view it.
In logical terms, they use the term narcissism for this type of feeling. Clarify again that point that a person tries his whole life, that satisfaction, a person tries to reach back to get that security and that all his wishes and all his fantasies are... And there's nothing that he lacks. He's totally satisfied.
Right?
See, and a person wants to get back to that point of satisfaction. So what he does is when he has money, he imagines that every one of his wishes can be satisfied, because as long as you have money, you can do anything you want. You see, in other words, if you actually spend the money, then of course then you have a physical object. See, I mean, you might fantasize about the object, but that fantasy is over. But as long as you have the money in the bank, or you put millions in the bank, and as you have millions, then you start saying, anything I want, I can have. See, so therefore it is similar to the original emotion of the infant child that imagines that everything, they really do feel total satisfaction because nothing on the physical world has broken into their world yet. But as soon as they start recognizing things around them, as soon as their mind is developed and they can recognize and their senses are more developed, and they could start recognizing things around them, then suddenly they recognize they don't have everything, and they're a little bit, they start, that the reality starts making them insecure. The truth is, for a human being, reality is the scariest thing in the world.
The way you understand it, you can bring them into...
Does the money actually accomplish this? No, the answer is that he has to get to, it's part of the fantasy. In other words, in reality, this person is not satisfied. On the contrary, this person is constantly driven. He has to constantly make more and more money to make sure that fantasy is satisfied. The person in reality is not satisfied. But however, and it's totally dependent, and even this little satisfaction that he gets is totally dependent on that money. That's why he feels secure with the money. That's what it means in the verse, that he feels secure secure with the money.
It doesn't
he feels secure that all his needs and all his protection and everything is totally guaranteed. But it's really not the money that's doing it. It's what the money, the fantasy that the money represents.
Whether it's monetary harm or...
It was explained the Ibn Ezra and how these ideas affect the idea of the Ibn Ezra. What happens is when a person feels this security, you see, via the money, so then the person feels a certain, of course, at this point he recognizes people around him, and so he feels that he is above all these people because he's reached back into this narcissistic state, you see. So the thing is that he feels... He feels that the world, that he, like, even could look down on the whole world because they're involved in the practical and the physical. And, like, in his imagination, he's really above it. In fact, he does have a certain security. The wealthy man feels a certain security. And it is in the real world that that everybody really desires to be like him and everybody tries to be with him. And somehow that they're going to relate to that security. So he feels, so the world, the people in the world also point to the security. Now, simultaneously, that he has the security,
the wicked,
you see,
right,
so he feels above people.
Is that correct?
You see, now once he feels above people, you see, there are see, the thing is that there the one thing is that the people feel put down by him. He makes enemies that way.
Then there's another check,
and two.
Does this work?
And two, the wealth itself, people really want that wealth because to have that security.
But right now, they also want only it. With analysis of the verse.
So therefore, the thing is that immediately awakens a desire. That's where they want to take that away from him and take it for themselves. Because first of all, because that sense of security that he has over other people. And two, they also have the fantasy of wealth, so therefore they feel they take it away from him, then they'll have that security which he has.
In other words, the first half...
That security about, which he thinks he has.
According to you, is that there's some benefit...
That he's going to go in, the other people are going to go after
right?
it exactly the way he went after it.
Okay?
So here he gets the enemies.
So then based
now,
on
there's
that,
two things that are going to make him fall. One is that since he's on top, so everybody underneath is after him. So there's a quantity of enemies. It's a good possibility somebody's going
to
break through.
When you run into a problem,
you see?
Where the first
and secondly, the other thing is that
then
the
really
the other reason is that the is that
what
see when
really
a person is involved and has security in
now
a certain area, so there, it's a certain amount of a narrow-mindedness. They don't have a picture of the whole thing. So many times they don't know to protect themselves.
In other words,
there's two things. There's the acquisition of money and how to protect your money, but then there's so many different people trying to break you down. You have to have all different areas of knowledge of how people operate to protect yourself in all these areas.
But again, the second half is only talking about a
so therefore, it's going to be that people are going to they're going to try and break it down as a high probability that they will be successful. In other words, a rich man knows how to, a wealthy man knows how to guard his money, investments and tax, saving on taxes, all these things. But the thing is that there's so many, when people are trying to break it down, there's so many different areas. There's so many different areas. It's either the quantity means that there's every detail. I mean, there's going to be a detail that he misses, even with all his knowledge of money. And two, his knowledge of people makes them lose out that they'll be able to get in and, you know what I mean? Like let's say, for instance, a person says he's a friend when really he's not. He'll miss out to recognize these different types of things. In other words, that's a different area. In other words, in life, to be successful in life in reality, you have to know many, many different areas. He knows one, he knows money. And since he has security in money, he doesn't need the knowledge of the other areas.
That
you see, since he doesn't need the knowledge of the other areas, so
those other
areas can break him down.
To the head of a righteous man, we are talking about...
By breaking him down, I mean, either, I mean, if you're talking about the mafia, it's actually killing him. And if you're talking about people that are just wealthy, then to destroy all, take away all his wealth, to break him in his wealth. Is that there are people that have their wealth all day.
He has secrets too.
Now, the thing is that first of all, when we talk about the verse, when this verse says this idea that he who has security and wealth will fail, it means probability. In the physical world, we always talk about probability. It's not like a definition that must be 100% correct.
In
practicality, we talk about probability. And the thing is, as many times our own ideas of wealth that we rely on it, and how we rely on wealth, many times blinds us to the quantity of people that really make it into old age itself. Because many times the driven for wealth destroys you. And how many people lose it? I mean, it is true that we would have to check the statistics on this. I mean, from the verse it seems to be, I'm just interpreting the verse, that the verse is saying that a lot of people, most wealthy people, that are driven for money, and they, in other words, I'm not talking about the just person, a person that does it. In other words, if you're talking about a person that does it in justice, I mean, that might be a different thing, but if you're talking about a person that's driven, that law doesn't make a difference to them. It's as far as the mafia or people that will destroy others, you understand, and harm others just for money. But the thing is that, these people will not, they will be cut down somehow. Either their money will be taken away, or the life will be taken away.
That which is to the head, in other words, which is in
satisfaction is concerned, there's no question in my mind that these people are not satisfied at all. When the verse is not talking about satisfaction, that's for sure they're not satisfied. But however, the question is, because the fact is, you see, they're constantly driven. They can't stop forgetting how much money they make. They're constantly driven.
A person that's driven
cannot be satisfied.
But however, because
so by definition, I mean, because he's not satisfied, that's why he's going for more. So therefore, that they're not satisfied, that's 100% correct. What the verse is saying is that they'll fail, you see. Now, what I say, insofar as failure is concerned, there is probability. Insofar as the question is concerned, what you wanted to say, Doug, that we're talking about the extreme case where a person is totally dependent, where he reaches a point where he's totally dependent on his money, and that he doesn't have other type of knowledge at all, and he's totally dependent on. I think you're right. I think that's what the verse is talking about. And that would, I think, answer the questions. In other words, certain people, they're driven for money, but they recognize other things besides money. But a person is totally driven, he's totally dependent on the money, totally. It reaches that point. Let's put it this way. A person is constantly changing. And at the beginning of his life, like we said before, what might start him out is a practical thing. But then he starts changing. Where he reaches the point where he's totally impractical, where money is the total thing. We totally rely on money, and all the side things are not important to him. That's the point where he will fail. Person really doesn't stay the same. Person isn't static. He's constantly moving. And therefore, when he starts out, he might not have this total of fantasy. And so therefore, if he doesn't, if he has a grasp onto reality, then he can protect it. But as he starts becoming more and more dependent on the physical, you see, on the money, And so these side things fall by the wayside, and the money becomes the essence. That's when the odds of failure become greater.
When it says the diligent becomes wealthy, wealthy in what?
The question of the righteous, and that is that they. We ask the question, how a leaf doesn't bloom. But Bill pointed out that without the leaf, it won't bloom. In other words, the leaf is a certain protection for the flowers that bloom. They need certain protection, and that's the leaf. Okay? Now, to the righteous, money is a very, very practical thing. Meaning, gives them time. If he had money, gives them time to study, gives them time to do charity. And his enjoyments are very, very simple enjoyments. So whatever, so the money will actually satisfy the simple enjoyments. It's not money is not a fantasy, but it's made to be used for practical reasons.
That it's impossible to
once a person becomes righteous,
totally
then money is enhances his life.
Then we must interpret
you see?
The metaphor.
And also, he doesn't have that haughtiness over people, so people don't sense that from him. And he also learns how to, since he doesn't have to show off his money, he doesn't have to be, in other words, in that security, looking over people, he doesn't have to show it off, so he knows how to cover up as well, to keep it quiet so he shouldn't awaken the anger of people. Because he recognizes this quality in others, so he tries to cover this. He tries. First of all, he doesn't have the emotion, and two, he tries to cover the wealth as much as he can, that people. So he won't make the enemies of people because of his wealth. We want to know what the subject is of the verse.
Now, the thing is that
one is that a person feels his total security based on money. That's his security. That's his life. That's his essence. Okay? While the other person, the tzaddik, he looks at money as just for usage. That's what he looks at it as a totally practical thing, that it's only for uses, but that's not the essence. And he uses it to protect his life, to allow his life to continue freely. Okay, so he uses it more as usage.
So therefore, he realized you would trust it, and therefore you would subject it.
Verse 29.
You would say
you're right.
He must be
11:29, and right? It says, he who troubles his own house shall inherit the wind.
That will cause a person.
And the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart.
Okay.
And let me give you.
What type of poverty?
And the fool shall be servant
poor person
to the wise of heart.
Like you said, like you
right. Now let me explain. First of all, by troubles his own house means that he doesn't go out to work.
Or
he doesn't make money.
Poverty, You know what I mean? It makes your point. Then you
and when it says the fool shall be servant, there are two ways of reading that. One is the fool shall be servant, or the servant of the fool will go to the wise of heart.
Therefore he becomes
now, either way you interpret it, the verse, from what I can see, it doesn't change the verse. There's two interpretations that they read the verse in two different ways. From what I can see, it will not either way. Sometimes when you have two possibilities, it changes the interpretation of the verse. In this case, I don't see
subject,
these two possibilities changing the interpretation of the verse.
In other words, sometimes before we could find the subject of the
one interpretation is that the fool become a slave to the wise of heart.
What's the two opposites that we're dealing with?
And two, the slave of the fool will belong to the wise of heart.
That happens to be true. But the question is,
and the question is, what's the difference between wise and wise of heart? I think wise of heart, according to the Malbim, is emphasizing the point that a person subserves all these desires towards reality.
Person is taught by virtue of
in other words, he controls his emotions to live in line with reality.
Will
difference between then the tzaddik is the tzaddik doesn't have to control himself. He naturally lives that life. He reaches the point where he naturally lives it. The wise of heart is simply a person that has to control it. That's according to the Malbim.
To be honest,
do you have any other possibilities of difference between wise and wise of heart? We'll be glad to approach it.
We suggest that
okay, is that clear?
To lose your
the first question is what does it mean by inherit the wind?
What next question is why does it say trouble is
house? Okay, case, okay?
Trouble is house, or is home, it should say some type of fool. Right? Why doesn't it mention
the child is
a fool?
About getting the mark, okay?
Become a, end up being a servant to the wise of heart, or his servant.
So what
or the fool servant becomes a servant to the wise of heart.
That's correct.
I mean his family.
Reality. They don't see the truth.
But not only family, it could be anything he owns.
So the thing is, a person is lazy.
What do we mean by troubles?
He doesn't see
that is that they don't have what to live on.
Truth
or they lose their money.
Of his actions. In other words,
two possible approaches to this verse, and we'll take both possibilities. The first question is what does it mean, inherit the wind? Is something that really just is nothing. He can't grab onto it. You can't hold onto it. So therefore, he winds up having nothing. Okay? Now, the question is, why inherit the wind? That is...
true.
Well, one possibility is just a metaphor for meaning the result that this is what he will receive. In other words, when a person does nothing,
we have to wait for
so he either inherits from his parents or he inherits nothing. So the thing is, it's a metaphor for inheriting nothing, for getting nothing. That's the way, it's like a metaphor, like people speak in, or idiom, that people speak in everyday life. This is the way they express it. It's also possible, since the second half says that that he will be a slave, or his slave will become a slave to the wise. So if he will become a slave, then inherit the wind, the way we interpret it, would work out. But if his slave would become a slave, where did he get the slave to lose? So therefore, inherit would mean to inherit something from his family, from his parents. You see? So, but then, if he's a fool, if he's a troublesome to his house, which means he's a fool, so then he really is inheriting the wind because he'll lose it all to the wise. That's how the two possibilities of him being a slave or his slave being a slave to somebody else. If he's a slave, so that means he had nothing, and then not only did he have that, he'll wind up selling himself. You see, because he's a fool, right? The other thing is that
if you're ignorant,
that he actually inherits from his parents something, so he has something. But since he's a fool, he'll lose that to the wise. Those are the two possible interpretations that we have of whether he will be a slave to the wise or whether his slave will be a slave to the wise. It's dependent on how you interpret the word inherit the wind.
Run by government, this is out of your hands.
Mentioned earlier was that the that either he becomes a slave, the fool becomes a slave to the wise of heart, or the fool's slave becomes a slave to the wise of heart.
But it will guarantee.
So there's two possible. In other words, either the fool becomes a slave. Or the fool's slave belongs to the wise of heart. That's the two ways of reading the verse.
Then you just have to accept these are the facts. There's nothing I can do about it.
That's right. The fool is the same person that troubles his house. That's correct. Therefore, we related it to how we'll interpret inherit the wind. If inherit the wind means that he does like an idiom for foolish acts, so then it means he will become a slave. If he inherits things from his parents, if inherit the wind means that he inherits from his parents, and then it will become like the wind, then the second half will be that the fool's slave will belong to the wise of heart.
In any given situation.
Is that clear? The last point was, is if he inherits something, if inherit the wind means that inherit something from his parents, then it will become like the wind, right? Now, what does he inherit from his parents? So they give us an illustration, a slave. Let's say he inherits a slave from his parents. That slave will belong to the wise of heart because he's a fool and a loser. Summarize. The person that troubles his house is a fool. Okay? It's the same person as in the second half that's a fool. Okay? Now, when it says inherit the wind, there are two possibilities by inherit the wind. Either inherit the wind is simply an idiom for consequences, so then that fits into the second half, that he will become a slave to the wise of heart. Okay? But if inherit the wind means that he inherits something from his parents, and it will be, so then he says, because he's a fool, it will become like the wind, you see, then that inheritance they use as a slave. The second half, they illustrate it with a slave. So he says, then the fool's slave and his inheritance will belong to the wise of heart, who loses his inheritance. Is what type of a fool are we talking about? And what's the nature of the fool that causes him to lose his money? One is that he's lazy, okay? Now, the question is, what is lazy? Lazy is the unwillingness to act upon the consequences, okay? Now, what stops him from doing that? In other words, that happens to be true. That is a lazy person. But what stops him from doing that? Because he doesn't see the consequences clearly. The reason why he doesn't see the consequences clearly is because his knowledge is not real to him. He might have knowledge of the future, and he might have knowledge of the consequences, but it's not real for him to act upon it. Knowledge, but the knowledge is not real to him. Like you see, sometimes people go out on the beach and they don't protect themselves and they get burnt. Everybody knows if you go out on the beach, you're going to get burnt the first day, and yet people still do it.
consequence is not real, that knowledge, the consequences, that it's not real. In other words, they only, what's real to them is only that which they experience. But then the consequences, since it's in the future, they're not experiencing it now, so therefore it's not real to them. By laziness. Because that person doesn't realize this. That is true. You might not realize it, but you will still get the consequences. It's we're not placing blame. We're just saying, objectively, this is what happens. In other words, that's why we call him a fool. A fool is a person that doesn't have knowledge. So therefore, because he doesn't have knowledge, he will pay the consequences. It has nothing to do with blame. So what would be the opposite? The opposite is where he sees the consequences, and it's real to him, and he forces himself to do that which is correct now, even though his emotions don't want to do it. They ask is, what is the subject of the verse? The possibility is that it's the consequence of laziness. The definition is because the subject of the verse has to include the wise of heart, and that would not include the wise of heart. That's only explaining the lazy person. The subject must be something that both participate of, right? Both sides are part of, but they relate to it differently. But it must be one subject. That the subject is consequences, different types of consequences. Okay. Now, the problem with that possibility is that it's too vague. I mean, practically every verse in Proverbs deals with consequences, different types of consequences. You see? Trying to define the, you're trying to make the subject of the verse that which the verse says. Think in terms of the ideas that we worked out and see if you could get the subject from the ideas. The subject should be something below the surface of the verse.
The subject is knowledge.
You see, there's two relationships to knowledge. One relationship to knowledge is that the knowledge doesn't affect you. In other words, you have knowledge, but your decisions in life is made from your own self. The knowledge doesn't affect how you make decisions at all. You see? And the other way of relating to knowledge is that the knowledge becomes real to you so that your decisions are based on that knowledge. Okay, so the subject is knowledge, right? There's two ways of relating to knowledge. One way is that knowledge is you just have it. The other is that it becomes real to you. So if it's not real to you, then you're not going to act upon it. The lazy person is a person that doesn't see, in other words, he knows the consequences, but it doesn't affect him. Doesn't affect his life. He won't make decisions based on those consequences. He'll make decisions on how he feels now. Why is it that if a person has knowledge and he knows the consequences, why doesn't he act upon it? What stops him from acting upon it? The answer is what stops him from acting upon it is his emotions, his immediate desire. In other words, a person wants to go out on the beach and they don't want to be bothered with putting stuff on them, and so they just go out, you see? And since it's so, therefore, his emotions to do the immediate needs take over. See, the thing is that the lazy person acts upon what he experiences. So if he has a certain feeling now, he's experiencing it then. He's experiencing that. But however, what's in the future, the consequences, that's only on knowledge. He doesn't make decisions based on knowledge, you see? question is, how would you make decisions based on knowledge? That's by studying, by constant studying. After a while, it starts affecting you, and that becomes real to you. But the thing is that the lazy person is a person that makes decisions based on his immediate feelings, immediate senses. Ability of interpreting this verse is not that he has the knowledge and that he doesn't act upon it, but that he doesn't have the knowledge. Okay? Question is, how does the verse work? What's the difference between the person that's a fool, that he doesn't have knowledge, and the wise of heart that does have knowledge? What's the difference between the two people? Let me put the question another way. Let's say, for instance, a person doesn't have knowledge of making money, right? Now, Mr. Clinton would like to say that we'll just train a person to teach him a trade. We'll teach him a profession. He's starting to learn, and we'll spend money in teaching him. So if he doesn't, if we teach him a trade, would that be the answer? Is that all he needs? What is he lacking? What knowledge is he? That's the question. What knowledge is he lacking? What knowledge is he lacking? First possibility is knowledge of reality. That's what he's lacking. Now the question is, how would that help? Talking about, in other words, when I say how would that help, I mean maybe Mr. Clinton is right. Just teach him a trade. Is that maybe we're saying he needs motivation. That would be the lazy person. That's not our problem now. Person might be motivated, but somehow he's missing some knowledge. What is he missing? Next possibility is his knowledge of the consequences. The thing is that these a person that knows he has to make a living and he wants to go out to work, but somehow he's not making it. Why isn't he making it? Confuse the first possibility with the second possibility. There's two separate approaches to the verse. The first possibility was lazy. He has the knowledge, but however, it's not real to him. So therefore, he doesn't act upon it. He acts upon his immediate experiences or feelings. The second possibility is that he's not lazy. He will act upon it, but he's lacking knowledge. Now the question is, what knowledge is he lacking that he needs? In other words, let's teach the guy a trade. Like Mr. Clinton says, let's teach the guy a trade, and then we'll put him out to work. Well, what's the problem? Relationship to money, there are a few relationships. There's the acquisition of money, there's the spending of money, and there's the saving of money, putting away for future. Now, the thing is that people have certain ways of relating to money, their basic nature. Like certain people are stingy, certain people are greedy, certain people, all different types of relationships to money, you see. Now the problem is not one particular area, but it has to do with the personality. When you relate to something in the physical, you relate based on your personality and your view of life, your philosophy of life. Right? In other words, if you have a philosophy of life of eat, drink, and be merry, then you're just going to spend money. You have to change that philosophy. You see? If you have a philosophy of life that philosophy of money, that money means only security and to protect you, so then you're going to hoard money. In other words, how you relate to money is based on your philosophy. And so therefore, let's say, for instance, you don't know how to make money, it's not only learning a trade, but it's learning how to deal with people too, because you can make money and people can take it away from you. You can learn a trade and you don't know how to talk to a boss. So the thing is there's many different aspects of the making of money. When a person doesn't make money, he might have to have a whole new philosophy of life. You see, it's not... See, the particular where a person fails in a particular area is a symptom of something's wrong with the person's soul, where how the person views life. When you make an error, it shows something is wrong. Like, let's say, for instance, sometimes what's wrong is your thinking. You have to be trained in logic, how to think correctly. Sometimes what's wrong is a certain emotion. I mean, there's many different aspects, you know. So the thing is that's why the opposite of a person that fails because of lack of knowledge is a fool, not because he's missing this that knowledge like Mr. Clinton wants to say, that he just has to teach them a trade. But the thing is that I think people can make it today. They have to know how to maneuver. But the thing is your personality doesn't allow you to maneuver, or your way of life, or your view of life. You see, that's what stops a person. There's a lot of things that stop a person from being successful. And when you're not successful in a practical area, so then you must go inside your soul and see what knowledge you're lacking. Sometimes it could be something deep inside the soul, your philosophy of life. Then you have to change that. What's the subject? What we're saying so far is that every human being has a philosophy of life, you see? And the question is that the thing is how you act and how you deal with life and what areas you study, what areas you don't study, and what forces you to do things is based on your philosophy of life. So therefore, the fool who has an incorrect philosophy of life is going to fail, you see. But the wise person who has a correct philosophy of life, so even if he doesn't have a particular knowledge, he'll know what to do or how to operate and how to deal with that situation. Two ways of gaining a philosophy of life. One is based on your personality, and one is based on knowledge. By personality, we mean that the there's never any change. So therefore, if his personality towards money is has a bad relationship to money, then he's going to lose it all. He's going to fail. But however, the wise of heart, even though he might have a personality that would lose money, but as he changes his philosophy of life, so then he'll change his view of money, and then he'll be able to act correctly towards money, and then it will be successful. Illustration of how you could interpret a verse in two different ways with the same facts. In other words, we have a person that's failing in money, and there's two different possibilities why he'll fail, either because he's lazy or he lacks knowledge. Okay? So there's an illustration of... Two interpretations of the same verse. Both are true. This is verse 30 of chapter 11, and it says, "The fruits of the righteous is the tree of life, and he who acquires souls is wise." I'll define what I mean by acquiring souls. It means a person that teaches another person the correct philosophy of life, and he changes and the student is going to change his life around. So what it means is now this person is a new person. In other words, when you see a person is defined by how he makes decisions. So if you make decisions based on your personality, that's one type of person. Now if you start changing and you put change on knowledge, then I've changed your life. You see, then your life has changed. That's why sometimes a teacher in the Torah, they call it father. Why? Because the thing is that you created a new person via the knowledge you've given him. So therefore, that's what it means to acquire the wise person acquires souls.
Now the first question is what is the fruit of the righteous? Question is, what is the gain? In other words, the fruit must be some gain. So the right, it's like a produce. So what's the gain of that fruit? So in other words, he's explaining what fruit is. You're saying fruit is a gain, some gain, and you're saying that the gain of the righteous is the tree of life, right? And the question would be, what is the tree of life? That would be the answer to the question of what the his gain is, his produce, abilities, and what the fruit is. In other words, it could be either for the righteous or it could be for others. Okay? There are two commentaries. Some learn it one way, some learn it the other. We'll have to follow and allow the discussion to help us decide. A metaphor, and the question is, how would you interpret the metaphor? Why is it that a person that acquires souls, in other words, that teaches others, why is he called wise? What does the first half have to do with the second half? What's the connection between the two? Whether the righteous of the first half and the wise of the second half is one person or two different people? Are we talking about one person, the two different qualities, or are we talking about two different people? From people, then what's the difference between the righteous and the wise? Is the tree of life the eternal life? We don't know from the verse what it is. We have to figure out what it is from the verse. I'm sure we could jump to many possibilities, but we have to see that we have to somehow approach it either from the verse or from some other verse in Torah that explains the tree of life and explains it from there. But you can't just jump here. You have to know what it is. I mean, it's like a blank at this point. So this is, can the tree of life be the world to come? Or it can't even be that? You know, the answer is that it can be the world to come. But, however, again, you have to have proof from either from this verse or from someplace in Torah what the tree of life is. To the subject here, or from some other place in Torah, somehow you just can't throw things around. The question is methodology. That after you get all the questions, then the then what do you do next? In other words, what's the next step? How do you approach the next step? The answer is the next step is not clear cut. There you need creativity. And the only thing you could do is go back to the phenomenon and keep letting it roll around in your mind. Sometimes what'll happen is you'll get another question, and that question will be the guide. And sometimes you'll see a certain aspect that about it that you didn't notice before, and that aspect will be the guide. But however, you can't just say what do I do now? You can't ask that question, but you do not. What you don't do is you don't look for an answer. What you do is you go back to the phenomenon
and look at it from try to view all from different angles until you something pops into your mind. Just enjoy the view. That's the only thing you can do. If nothing comes, then you can't move ahead. Then that's it. Then I've reached the end here, and I can't go further. But if something new comes, then see how that fits in, and that new idea will work out. Is that, in other words, the answer comes as a result of viewing the phenomenon. You see? Like many times we get into a discussion and then we start redefining basic terms many times. That terms that we've always used. Why? Because suddenly we realize that's what we need here. There's something missing in my understanding of a certain term. Now, I don't know if that's the answer. I have to wait for my creativity to come up with the points. You see? Sometimes you come up with a possibility, you work on it for an hour, and then it doesn't pan out. It doesn't help. So then you have to let it roll around in your mind again until another quality or another question or another point comes through. That seems to be the guide. But it must be always going back, allowing the phenomenon to roll around in your mind. The ego or competition would definitely vie away from this, because they want results. And so therefore, that this is how ego and competition could harm you in your thinking. Even though to begin with, many times, you do need that to motivate you, but when you're actually thinking, you have to be careful that it shouldn't affect your thinking process and to make decisions, you know, on answers and jumping to conclusions. Because of those emotions, you have to be very, very careful not to allow that to happen. Predict what it's going to be. And you can't define what you're doing. You have to allow it to happen. But after you do get the idea, then you can come back and analyze the process and define the process, what you did do. When you're involved in thought, and you have, like here, the tree of life, we have no way of going, then what you do is you analyze that which you can analyze and which you do have information for. And in this case, what we do have information for is the second half. In other words, we could ask, what makes a wise person, what's there about a wise person that he wants to acquire souls? You see, what's there about him? And if we could get all the qualities, what there is about acquiring souls, you see, and of teaching others, so then maybe from that point we could then see the comparison to the other side. And don't look for answers, because if you try to force an answer, you're going to stick to the side of the righteous, the fruit of the righteous. And what is Tree of Life? But sometimes it takes a totally different angle, and only your creativity can do that. You see, you don't know what to look for, so you have to allow it to happen where the natural mind goes to. And naturally, the mind will go to an area that it can move to, where it will open up. Sometimes it's a question. In this case, the natural mind should go to the area that it has, and it has what makes a wise person want to teach. Why is it wise for a teacher to teach others, and that way acquire souls? Okay, there are two benefits. Well, there are two reasons why a person would teach. One is for his own benefit, and his own benefit would be in the discussion, in explaining, first of all, from the questions of the students, the insights of the students that the teacher might not see, and two, in trying to break it down for the student, it becomes clearer to the teacher. That's one benefit. The other benefit is justice, that he feels an obligation
to teach others, to show them the truth for the other people's benefit. Okay? Now, okay, those are the two benefits of the wise. Is there some way, again, from this verse to prove which of these two possibilities the verse is talking about? This, maybe go back to the first part. Now, that is a possibility. And when in the middle of creativity, you can't decide, you know what I mean? You can't say yes or no. But the only thing is, at this point, I think we'll have to stick to the second part. Unless you have a point from the first half. In other words, it is possible, but you have to explain what is in the first half that explains it. Well, maybe we didn't get all our information from the second half yet. Could go either way when you're creating. Okay? The quality that is mentioned is that the fruit of the righteous means a result. In other words, the fruit is not a benefit for the tree. It's just the produce of the tree, but the benefit of the fruit is more for other people, for people or for animals. It's not a benefit for the fruit. It's not a benefit for the tree. So therefore, one possibility is to say that the righteous, the fruit of the righteous, must also be talking about some type of justice. Possibility is from the second half when he says he acquires souls, you see. Now, the thing is, if it was a personal gain, it would talk about somehow the wise person gaining. Acquiring souls means that they change. There's a change. In other words, the subject is really, when you define acquiring souls, there's a change in the student. Okay, and the person that you're teaching, he is changed, so it's pointing to the student. So therefore, in the second half, I would say it also points to justice. So I would say you're right that both halves seem to point that the subject of the verse is justice, which can't. So therefore, the tree of life would have to point to some type of justice for others. In other words, it's a tree of life for others, not for himself. We're going to translate the tree of life. I mean, we're working basically from the verse. Therefore, there could be other verses that use the tree of life as a metaphor for a different quality of tree of life, and you always have to see how it fits in. Sometimes there's a term that could be used in different ways, in different verses, the same metaphor. Because a metaphor is that you're not using the term as a whole, but you're using one quality of the term. We're looking for a certain quality. There are commentaries that learn the tree of life, and they go back to the tree of life in Genesis, but we're not taking that approach. In other words, what they did is they were also stuck on what the tree of life is, and they went back to Genesis and defined it from Genesis, and then from Genesis kept applied it here. You see, that would be a different approach, which is a correct approach. But however, we're going straight from the verse. So we're going to come out slightly different, probably slightly different than the tree of life that has to do with Genesis. Analyze the different types of justice. Justice is like if a person has trouble, you try to help them, right? Justice is if two people are having an argument and you try to straighten it out among them. What justice is taking a group of people and organizing a system, or becoming a leader of Israel, or the leader of a nation, and making sure, and you do it for the benefit of the public. All these are areas of justice. So when you're doing justice, I mean, it takes on helping others and create either the individual to help them personally, to help them to help a person's relationship to others, or to run a system. The two ways of operating, you really see the difference between Moses and Aaron. Moses was the lawgiver, and he made sure the system worked. He always dealt with the nation as a whole to make sure the system worked.
While
our Aaron, they always say he was a lover of peace and he chased peace, which means that he dealt with the individuals and their problems, or if there was any disagreement between people, he would try to, he would be the peacemaker. But both areas are areas of justice.
The wicked,
so if that's true, then the so let's say that's the fruit of the righteous. The fruit of the righteous is for others that he does justice, right? And that we got from the subject of the verse, from the second half of the verse, that it was dealing with justice. Now, if this is true, then what is the difference between the righteous and the void? Why does one person seem to get involved with the
he could say it's one person that there's two qualities.
What is the, we could put it that way, whichever way. I'm not sure yet which way to go here, whether it's two people or one people, one person. So, but the thing is, we have to define the difference between the two types of justice. One is working with the people, and one is working by teaching.
We know all the famous wicked people that
the question is, what's the difference? Where did I get the question from?
Everybody, right.
Okay. Now, the way I'm getting the question is, since the verse says there, it breaks it up into two parts, so then the two parts must be either two qualities or two people. So then I have the right to ask them, what's the difference between the two? There must be some difference if the verse broke it up. Why does the verse just talk about justice? And one of the ways of doing justice is teaching. That's also a method of justice. But the question is, what is the difference between the two?
You see
what I mean? If the verse broke it up, there must be some difference between the two. There must be some quality in the difference in the type of justice between these two things.
It's not pointing to any information.
Noting that it's two different people, I'm just saying there's still two possibilities. The original question of that is whether it's two people or two qualities, the question still exists. All I'm saying is that since the verse breaks it into two parts, you see, then definitely there are two qualities there. There must be some difference in the type of justice. We must be able to pinpoint the difference if the verse is breaking it into two points. You see, now the question is what's the difference between the two?
The verse
is acquiring souls, and by acquiring souls, it means he develops a person where his personality is different. In other words, a regular personality comes from, like we've said many times, either from parents or from society and from friends around him, his personality is built. He doesn't even realize it. While the through learning, you have a Torah personality, which is different. It comes, your personality develops from the knowledge of Torah, from the as your mind sees things. You look at things in a different view, and it changes your personality, how you operate, how you deal, and what motivates you. So therefore, by acquiring souls, it means that you have changed this person. You have changed this person from one personality to another, so he's a different person now. So therefore, that's what it means you have acquired him. Like, in other words, in Torah, many times they use the term father and son in three different ways. One is the biological. That's physical. Then there's psychological. If you didn't give birth to the child, but you raised the child. And then there's a philosophical child, which you've changed the person via the knowledge. So then in that way, you're a parent to the child. That is what it means acquiring souls.
Why? Because there was a new strategy of war that the enemy used against Saul, and somehow...
And Aaron, and Moses worked for the system, and Aaron worked with the individuals. It's two types of justice, but however, those two possibilities are fitting under, both together, under the fruits of the righteous, is the tree of life. In other words, the tree of life here means that he helps them in their personal life, or he works out the system to help them live the good life. So the tree of life is that, in other words, a way of to have a good life in your everyday life, to have a good life, to have peace, and it works correctly. Every aspect of the system works correctly. So therefore, that we're not trying to analyze the difference between those two, between Moses and Aaron. That's a separate discussion. But we're putting that in one category of justice. Once you by helping others. Evil, you know why. However, the second here, King Solomon is breaking it down between that type of justice where you help them out in their lives and help them out, which is also helping them out in their lives, but through teaching, which he seems to break down into a different category. I mean, teaching would also help them with their lives. It should be another way of helping them. You see?
Like many
now,
times,
why does the verse just break it down between helping of others,
better life,
you see,
than
by helping them in their lives, or to teaching them, and then the education will help them in their lives?
We don't see it the same way when we come back. Remember, there were weaknesses there. Now, the
and wise. In other words, the righteous seem to be dealing with, and we still we don't know if it's two different people or one person, two qualities of one person or two different qualities, but of different people. The thing is that, but however, what we're trying to do is know the difference between justice to the people and by helping people in particular and by justice by educating people.
By saying that, but still in all, it is a positive
the education has the quality of that is the essence of the wise and the righteous. That's what makes them wise and righteous.
It's
via their education. That is the single most important thing
to
the wise person and to the righteous.
Positive or negative,
I mean, there's no way of reaching God. There's no way of reaching justice. There's no way of perfecting the soul except through knowledge of Torah. There's no other way. And that is the essence.
While
the dealing with others, the question is, why should I do it all together? I mean, the real benefit to any person is if he wants to be educated. But to help him in his personal life, and that he should be able to have a personal life, the question is I understand it's a good, but really the essence, the real benefit, the ultimate benefit to a person is really giving him knowledge. You understand? Any wise person, any righteous person would definitely hold the ultimate benefit is making a person an independent thinker, you see? And the question is, if I only have time for one of these, and definitely both the righteous and the wise, since the righteous is a higher level than the wise, would definitely both want to educate people, because that is the ultimate benefit for people. Now the question is, why is it that I should get involved in justice altogether? If you look at the all the righteous people really didn't want, like you see Moses didn't want to go out on his mission.
We'll
the idea of justice takes him away from his world of learning. He has to deal with people.
The
question is why is it that the righteous
want
to go? What is the difference between a wise? In other words, now coming down, that it has to be two people. My question is pointing that they're two people, because if it's one person, then the righteous simply do one way or the other. In other words, there's two ways of doing it. And if they wanted to say that, the verse should say the righteous could do this or the righteous could do that. When he says the righteous does one and the wise does another, it points to the question, why should the wise, why should the righteous want to help? If there's two ways of helping through education, generation and helping in particular, he should try to help them in the most essential way. So he should help those people that want to learn and teach those people. Why should he get involved with the particulars of a person's life? I mean, he should educate them. But you see that they worked with the system, even though people didn't understand why, and they rebelled against him. They didn't see the benefits. But yet they rebelled against Moses. And you see that Aaron got involved and two people had a petty argument. He would try to work it out without even showing them how he did it. In other words, there was no education. He just worked it out that they should have peace among themselves. He tried to help a person to benefit. You see, to have like a good life. You see? Now the question is, if you have a choice of education, helping a person with his personal life, the main thing is education, because then he'll have a good life. Why should a person get involved in the particulars?
By other people? Or is there inherently...
There's one point, and that is the righteous, if they had the choice to teach, they would have... There was a situation where they didn't have to help the public, or they didn't have to help individuals, they would teach, because they would hold that's the most important thing. But however, the way we're seeing the verse, that it makes it seems the verse is pointing to a righteous and a wise person, so it seems to be a different quality in the righteous. And the wise, that the wise would only teach and he wouldn't go out to do that other type of justice.
So when he hears these stories, therefore he desires to be righteous.
Well, what does the righteous person see that the wise person doesn't see? We made a distinction, just clarifying what we said, and that is what we started out. We made a distinction between the righteous and the wise, that the righteous are helping. In other words, the wise is dealing with the essence of his, what he holds the essence of life is, and the only good life is the life of learning, the life of study, the life of Torah. That's it. Now the thing is the question is, so we ask, so then why should a righteous person altogether go to the bother with the others? In other words, if somebody's in trouble, he should go and say, look, I want to help you out, and the best way for you to gain is by learning, so come on to a class, I'll give you a class to teach you. Because that is the ultimate gain. He would benefit in the physical, and he would also gain in the spiritual, and he'll gain in his world, and he'll have a place in the world to come. But however, the other way of helping is helping the system. It's a nice thing to do, but a human being can't do everything, so it'd be more important to do just the teaching. That'd be the biggest help to a person. Why should he help him in any other way?
Right? They can only benefit other people. Now, how can it benefit other people? Only by virtue of the fact that they're able to identify with
him. And he sees only a benefit in the truth. That's what motivates him, is the truth. And therefore, if he wants to help others, it's via the truth. That's the only thing he sees. The righteous person is a person that the knowledge that he had, he has to become a wise person first before he's righteous. But then, as he studies, his studies become a part of him. It starts motivating him, the knowledge itself. And one of the ideas is that he sees and becomes a part of him, and that's a further development, is that it's the will of God that you should help others. In other words, that there is really no reason to help others. Why should I help another person? I mean, if a person is basically selfish, and there has to be a reason to help others. Now, if you hold from evolution, then there's no purpose in life. We're all simply a result of the evolutionary process, and we're just another type of animal. Now, as an animal, I'm a selfish person. There's no purpose in life. Everybody's selfish. Now, the only reason I would help somebody is if it's some benefit to me. But if there's no benefit to me, then why should I help another person? But however, once you recognize that there is a God, once a God created the world, then there must be a purpose to the world. Now, since I might not understand
when you have a purpose that you don't
in the world,
understand,
the Torah tells us that you must emulate, imitate God.
The question is regarding,
now, we
then,
see that it's God's
question,
will to do justice and to help
now,
people.
The mind
so, therefore, the reason why I do it simply is because I
so
know that it's God's will. And this becomes part of it's a certain
right
level of
so
knowledge that it becomes part of you to do justice. See, the lower level of person does justice because the Torah commands him to.
Now,
so he has to do justice because he follows the commands of
wrong,
the Torah.
Then that
but the higher level of justice does it because he wants, because as a result of his knowledge of God, so then he wants to get as close
no
to God to do God's will.
To look
and he sees it's God's
no
will
to
do
justice.
So therefore, that's why he does justice.
Once
so therefore,
the
wise person teaches, not that the righteous wouldn't teach, because that's justice too. But if it's necessary to do, run the system or to help people individually, then he will definitely
really
do that.
And there's two types of tests. One, does it fit into the...
Hey, another suggestion has been made that maybe the fruit of the wise, of the righteous, is that, is that his actions... His actions, people learn more from
anything,
his actions.
Because somebody else
you have to understand
that
if we decide to translate
the
verse that way, then it comes out a totally different proverb.
But then the
so we're
going to
take it that way and analyze the proverb.
It must be clear to the mind that the interpretation is correct.
What we're saying at this point is that the righteous
it must be
definitely
a, it must
could teach.
To the mind.
In other words,
the mind,
it seems like the wise could only teach,
that you
but
have
the
to
righteous can teach,
this way,
but also people can learn
okay?
from his
there's
actions.
There's no way that when you're starting with studying...
The
ability really
that we wanted to say is
to
that
study.
The... wise just teach, but they don't live that type of life. Then the question to that would be that then they're not wise if they don't live the life of what they're teaching.
The
idea of proverbs or we're teaching as a subject, then they're not wise. That wouldn't be a wise person. It's a person that has knowledge, but it's not wise. So the thing is that the wise person must live the life of righteousness too. He must live the ideas of this verse. So then the question comes about, then what's the difference between the righteous and the wise?
You can't see that for years. The benefit. By studying all the throughout the Proverbs and throughout other
that
areas.
The subject is education.
The benefit, and then it becomes part of you.
And there's two ways of getting an education.
You
either you're taught or you learn from a person's actions. Now it seems like from the righteous you can learn his actions. But however, from the wise you can only learn from what he teaches.
The name
okay,
of the
but however, at least we got the
so
subject, which is education, but we still don't understand if the wise do all the correct actions, because insofar as he's wise, he must do the correct actions, or not he'd be a fool. So then what is the difference between the righteous and the wise?
You must start out with an incorrect motive.
That there must be some type of action that the righteous are doing, which the wise are not. However, the righteous cannot do an action of the fool or
the
wicked. Because if he did, then we wouldn't call him wise. We call him a fool or wicked. So therefore, he has to be doing correct actions, but somehow I still shouldn't learn from his actions. I should learn from the actions of the righteous. I should only learn from the wise what he teaches me, but not from his actions. What I'm saying is this verse is telling the receiver of an education
yet,
who wants to learn.
He's
giving him advice how to learn. Saying, if you see a wise person, then you could learn from him and he could educate you. If you see a righteous person, not only can he educate you, but you could learn from his actions. You could watch his actions. But with the wise, you still have to be careful
involved in
of
the world
effect.
Of studies,
you
then
careful.
You'll go back to these
we don't know why
stories
yet,
of the rights
but that
of witness
seems to be what the verse is saying at this point.
And see why the
what was suggested here is that the righteous is the knowledge has become part of their personality. They have a new personality.
A person a
while
thinker,
the wise might have their old
these,
personality, but
they
don't make decisions based on that personality. They
and,
make decisions based on their mind.
You see? But,
you
well,
see,
at the beginning
but
when
they still
them,
have the old personality.
Then we have
but
to
if they made decisions based on the old personality, insofar as they
yes,
do that,
really
they'd be called
verse,
a fool or a wicked.
And we
so therefore,
he
must make
story.
Decisions based
and
on knowledge. But however, his emotions are not yet in line with it. His emotions are in conflict with his decisions made by
the
mind. However, the righteous is their emotions are totally in line with their actions.
So therefore, the way we're learning the
question is, the question is that in where does this show up? What type of actions would
the
difference show up in? That one I should learn from and one I shouldn't.
To have them identified
was put forward.
The,
it was the same question as before, but however a little clearer. And that is that if the wise do the correct actions and their problem is internal, they just have an internal conflict, but the actions are correct, then why can't I learn from their actions? I don't see their internal struggle, so therefore I should be able to learn from the wise from their actions equally to the righteous.
And the beneficial life and determine away from the
right, and I would say I wouldn't say that he can't learn from watching the wise, but there he would be more careful. He would have to be more careful because there must be something that shows up there that is different than in the righteous, which shows up that difference we don't have yet.
The thing is, what the seller is saying, this is good for a beginner.
Again, the problem is that the person that is learning has to learn, can learn from the righteous from his actions. But however, from the wise, he can't learn. He has to be careful what he learns from his actions. You see? So therefore, the thing is because for some reason his action is somehow going to show up differently. What we want to know in what way that it's going to show up differently in the wise than in the righteous. And we define that the righteous is their emotions are in line with their ideas, and there's no conflict in any of his actions. Well, that was the righteous, and the wise are people that they live according to their mind, and they see the truth, and they live according to this truth, but however, they're still, their old emotions are still working, so therefore, they have a certain conflict. But we want to know how, if I'm learning from them, from watching them, what would I miss up by the wise that I wouldn't be able to learn from the righteous? Has been taken as saying that somehow, if a person has an emotional conflict with his actions, he's doing the right actions, somehow that's going to show up. Somehow that's going to show up in the action. We still don't know how.
In the mouth of the wicked.
Now is that when the righteous, let's say, gets bad news, so he will just deal with the problem rationally, and that'll be it. While the wise, his conflict will show up, but in other words, you'll see the conflict. But however, he will do the right action. Okay. Now the thing is, when the observer, now if you are a person that is learning by observing somebody,
okay,
which means that you stop to think it through and analyze it, right? Then you're going to analyze what that reaction was.
But over here.
Okay.
You're going to analyze
what that reaction, unless you're a person that just learns passively and you really don't think it through, then you have to be very careful about learning from people. Even from the righteous, then you have to be careful, because Maimonides says you shouldn't imitate the act. Many times they tell stories about our sages in the Talmud. He says you shouldn't imitate what they do, because you have to understand why they did it. Because the thing is, they might be doing it for a certain reason, and you don't have that reason. Let's say, for instance, there's a certain Tana, that's an author of the Talmud, that had a certain emotional problem, and he's working it out by doing certain actions. Now, if you understood the problem, then you understand what the actions and how they deal with the emotion, what the problem is. But if you don't have that problem, then why should you imitate him? So therefore, when you are observing somebody, or when you read about somebody, their actions, to gain from them, you must know exactly why he did it and analyze. Now, if a person is going to make facial expressions or a certain anger will show, even though he won't act upon that anger, you see, then you will immediately analyze it and see if that anger was in line with reality or not in line with reality. Like, for instance, Elisha, the prophet, got angry, and nobody said that he did anything wrong, so therefore we would have to analyze even anger when it's right and when it's incorrect. So the thing is that I see it's a good possibility, but I don't see it really working in the verse.
The verse itself has to guide you.
We would say that the...
It's going to force
that,
us to talk,
see, when you have an emotion,
that both
you work in that framework. There's a certain framework which you're working in, you see? And when you're working, even though you're doing everything rational, when you're working in that framework a person could pick up. You see? That's where it's dangerous.
Okay?
Because the thing is, as you start analyzing things, it's a different, you're picking up things which, in other words, which
Solomon set it up in the verse.
Framework in which you work that the person senses and picks up, his emotions pick up on it. And when he picks up on those in that framework, that could affect them. If it's sometimes a wise person is working on an incorrect framework until he works to get to the higher level where his whole framework is correct. So therefore, you would pick up on that incorrect framework in which he is operating.